doodly doo bam ba ding 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 ding. Hello, everybody. Hey, everybody. Hi, this is Dave here. Dave, your favorite podcaster. Oh, hi, Dave.
Oh, hi, everybody.
Oh, what a day. Hey, it's been a long day, and it's going to be a short podcast. Began this morning on New Hampshire Public Radio and with Dan Gilmore, and I thought it was great. We had a wonderful time. Interesting conversation. Sort of started off in a kind of predictable way with, people talking about war and bloggers maybe getting theirs after having given such hell to the professionals. I understood something in a way that I had never understood it before, in a sort of narrow way. The professional mainstream media has only seen sort of like one face of the bloggers, and what ended up happening on the show was fantastic. Was that the real blogging world showed up, and they were a woman from Keene, New Hampshire, who had a blog that was just about what was going on in Keene, and a corporate blogger who was only had one rule, which was that she wasn't allowed to disclose company secrets, which is perfectly sensible. And I said, these people are treading on untested waters and breaking ground and doing it's kind of breathtaking. And then I had a short conversation with Marissa Meyer at Google, and not sure how to write it up, so I'm going to try talking it through. Basically, I don't think they're going to budge. I had suggested that, they do user testing to find out if their assumptions were actually true about users being able to tell the difference between Google links and the links that were in the HTML originally. And she said that she had actually done the user testing and that it turned out the users actually could tell the difference. I found that and hard to believe. I still do find it hard to believe, but she said it. I guess we got to accept that at face value. And I, at one point I said, I just can't believe that I'm talking to somebody from Google. I know what it's like to be on the other side of this, and I can hear the wheels turning. And she's thinking, who is this guy? How does he? He doesn't have any idea what Google's like. And what I would say if I actually had heard that, I know this is all fantasy, is that I do have a view of Google, and Google, as far as I'm concerned, this better be worth a lot of money to them, because they're cashing in with, I don't think that in the end it's going to be just me, because, and maybe it is, in which case then it's going to be all right, because it's not the toolbar as it is today that I'm so concerned about. It's that where is the line that they won't cross? And I kept coming back to that, and I kept getting no idea of what that line is. In other words, at some point, here's the scenario. All right, now that Google has done this, and assuming that they won't pull it back, then it's only a matter of time, probably not very much time, before the Yahoo toolbar has equivalent feature. And then, of course, Yahoo would try to one-up Google, and the obvious way to do that is to make it not a matter of user interaction. And then you just move on from there. It's like more things are hotted up and linked to more information, and so our blogs, basically. And not just our blogs, of course, because there's also the publications, the New York Times and Time Magazine and the Weather Channel and the State Department website. Basically everything's your bank statement website, your brokerage account, your hospital records. All these things can be made, quote, more useful, unquote, by and being enhanced by what these technology companies think, you know, they don't think that you need it. They think there's an opportunity to make money here. I mean, basically, they're going to charge people for the flow, you know. They're going to count the click-throughs, and they're going to charge them for it. And of course, they're not going to – there's the other aspect of it. They're not planning on paying any of the content providers. So it's a net positive to their balance sheet and a net negative to the content industry, to the extent that it is an industry. And it's certainly going to be a lot harder to speak in this kind of an environment. I don't believe that links is where it's going to stop. Number one. Number two is links are a very, very, very important part of what we do. And it's also a very important part of what Google does. There's a lot of cashing in going on here. I mean, they're cashing us in, but of course they're cashing in their search engine as well, because if there's no integrity of the links, I mean, how the hell are they going to build PageRank? I don't know. It's a very sad moment, and and there's only, you know, I can't fight this. I mean, basically, you know, I'm one person with a blog, and that's what I can do. You know, I can say it over and over again. I can look for ways to try to reason with people who I think ought to be supportive of this. But in the end, if a lot of people don't speak up, then it's going to just happen. And then, you know, the next event will happen, and the next one eventually. At some point, people may figure out that, whoa, we just lost something. But maybe not very many people will care. And so it comes down to, like, do you care or don't you care? And, you know, somebody suggested that maybe the big publications kind of like this because, you know, and it'll mean basically that the web sort of becomes this, you know, complete chaos. And that the only information people will trust is the stuff that you get in print, because there, you know, no technology company gets in between the delivery of the print and the person who's reading it. You know, I know that at that point I would probably much prefer to write for print than I would to be writing for the web. And you know, knowing the reason why I don't write for print is that I didn't like the editorial process, but at least there's a human being that you can talk to. Here, it's Google's software, and Google, forget it. You can't talk to Google. I mean, Google's just, they live on another planet. They don't acknowledge that we exist. And, you know, it's funny because if you look at their story, they say, well, they care about users, and, you know, well, but the users came to look at my content. That's, you know, I mean, they didn't. Somehow, it's like they're having a party at my house, and I'm not even there, you know. Anyway, so I had the talk with Marissa Meyer, and this is my report on that. I hope I'm not going to, like, write much more about this. I will, however, if other people continue to, you know, find angles on it, if there's any show of progress or change in the situation, then of course I'll report on it. But, you know, my hope is that I can now move on to other things and that we'll maybe find a sort of safe harbor in here. That's kind of the angle that I'm looking at, is like, could we set up an environment where we can be protected against this? A place where you could have all of the safety of print to communicate without having to actually go to print and staying all electronic. Because, of course, you know, I've spent all these years, like, learning how to make all this stuff work electronically. It's going to be kind of hard to walk away from it. Anyway, that's it. This is podcast number 2 for March 1st, 2005. And I know it's an unusual day when I do 2. But maybe we'll have more of those days around now. So anyway, that's it. And what is this? A 9.5-minute podcast. Not too bad. Anyway, hope you all had a great day, and talk to you again real soon. Bye.